Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with...
Shoshana Keats-Jaskel.
We're going to talk about the hot topic of the news, as we've been wont to do. Now, these days, it's abortion, it's Roe v. Wade, it's the overturn of Roe v. Wade, it's the congressional lack of support for not overturning Roe v. Wade. And I feel like there is great capacity today, Shoshana, to misspeak. So we're going to make a disclaimer in advance that we record this episode in advance, but we don't script it. So we try to get rid of any flubs we might say. But if we misspeak here, we ask your forbearance because this is a hot topic. People have very strong emotions about the issues pertaining to abortion, the situation in the United States, the situation not in the United States. And we're going to do our very best to represent what we think. I think, Shoshana, that you and I are, if not on the same page, then very close on the same page. With
such a rarity.
With these issues. But also, we know that not everybody is going to share our opinions. That's how this goes, because abortion is complicated and a hot topic. I want to mention what we're not going to be talking about today, because in this same vein, as it being a hot topic and the kind of thing that people feel very passionately about in all different ways of the aspects of the issue, I want to recognize that we are not talking about the racial divide on this issue in the United States, the class divide issue on this issue in the United States. We're not saying they're not important. They're important. We're not talking about them. We're not going to really talk about what it used to be like in the United States before Roe v. Wade. These are also important. People have personal stories of abortion or the lack thereof back in the day. We're not going to talk about it. We're also not going to talk about what we already devoted a full episode to in our podcast. We'll include the link to that in our show notes, namely the personal stories that can be very, very powerful about where abortion is warranted, the benefits that can come out of an abortion. We heard a story from Rachel Stomel, this was some years ago, about how a family now has 8 children, I think 8, because they knew that abortion was possible and they had a very rare genetic disease that had they not been able to have any circumstance of abortion, they wouldn't have stopped at 2. So again, we're not talking about that. We have those stories. We recommend that you listen to them. It's kind of a primer. It's the preliminary stories about women themselves, families themselves in the Jewish world. And I think that perhaps that's the first stop in a conversation about abortion, the people who are involved. But we've had that first stop. We had that episode. Listen to it. I listened to it again recently. It's, I think, a strong episode. And I think it says some things that are valuable, even without Roe v. Wade being on the table or about to be off the table, it would seem. There are a lot of angles to the abortion discussion. Today, we're going to talk about what does it mean? And, we're going to free range here a little bit, but the issue that we want to talk about is what does it mean for Roe v. Wade to be overturned in the United States as a matter of policy, how that affects Orthodox Jews in particular, and how there's, a potential clash of values here. I want to say for the record that nobody I know, that's maybe too strong, but I feel pretty strongly that very few people I know would say abortion is something to be taken lightly. Sure, no problem. Go have an abortion. It's a heavy-duty decision for those who are in the situation to decide. Sometimes, and we talked about this in a previous episode as well, sometimes it's a matter of the life of the mother. Sometimes it's a matter of the life of the baby where the fetus is not viable and there would not have been a story to tell, meaning there is no child to have a story coming out of it. So why does it matter? We defined this last time. We're going to say it again. Judaism has a different definition or different parameters of abortion as compared to the Christian right that is driving the policy changes in America. And I don't think we can say that loud enough or enough times, right? The idea that conception is the moment that life begins is not the way the Torah views life. Why is this important? Because the whole question of outlawing abortion comes from an impetus to say that that fetus has the same life, the same right to life that the mother who would bear the child does. And in halacha, it's more complicated. We've talked about this before. I also would like to refer you all to Rabbi Scott Kahn, our producer, has a podcast called The Orthodox Conundrum, in which he interviews Rabbi Jeremy Weider, who's a Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University. Full disclosure, I know Rabbi Jeremy Weider. He is incredibly knowledgeable. He speaks very well, I think, on providing the halachic background to this question. So we're working off of that, as well as whatever other research we ourselves have done, to explain that there is a stage from the moment of conception on for about 40 days, meaning the Gemara calls it 40 days, that's described as Mayim Ba'alma. There's no way to say in halacha that that stage of development is called life. After that, it gets complicated. The Gemara has a machloket whether the fetus is independent of the mother or simply another limb of the mother. So these are our givens. This is the backdrop against which we're discussing. Shoshana, I want to turn it over to you because I'm sure you have plenty to say. And away we go.
Well, I think first of all, we need to talk about what are we talking about? Meaning, why are we talking about this now? Obviously, or not, maybe not obviously, although from what I see on my social media feeds, it seems that there is no one who doesn't know what's going on in America, which is that there was a leaked document from the Supreme Court that the justices were discussing the overturning, the potential overturning of Roe versus Wade, which was the landmark decision of the Supreme Court to make abortion, ending a pregnancy, a constitutional right. So what does it mean if this constitutional right would be overturned? And I'm just going to quote here from a few articles that I read so that it's not my words, rather it is people who are experts in this matter. If the draft opinion becomes official, it will immediately open the door for states to pass laws to restrict or ban abortion outright. And in fact, 13 states already have so-called trigger laws that will take into effect as soon as Roe is struck down, which means that to get an abortion, people who are pregnant will have to travel out of state if they can afford to do so, or they will not be able to have an abortion at all. And my understanding beyond that is that they could even potentially criminalize having an abortion, so that if you do have an abortion in that state, somehow, whether someone is allowing it or doing it, you can be prosecuted as a criminal for ending a pregnancy that is in your body.
And the practitioners.
And the practitioner, correct. Like, not just the woman herself, but also the person who helped her perform the abortion. You know, we're not talking about hangers, we're not talking about women bleeding out. But what we are going to talk about is, why should people care? And it's actually funny that, because I know we have these in our show notes, like, why should people care? And I'm like, who do you know that doesn't have an opinion on this? Like, are you serious? Like, I had the most stormy day on my own personal Facebook a few days ago, and I literally had to take a day off, quote unquote, to just free my mind and my body from the tension of these conversations around abortion. And I don't understand. I know people like to have opinions, Jews all the more so, but the idea of having such a, I'm trying to think of something I have such a strong opinion about that wouldn't actually affect me, or like people are like, well, we're just having a theoretical conversation. And I'm like, but for you, having a conversation about abortion or what the father's rights halachically might be in abortion, it's theoretical. And like a Talmudic, you know, what happens if an ox gores someone? But it's not theoretical. It's real. It's real right now. And that's, I think, what we want to talk about today. Like, talking about abortion at any moment is always going to be stormy because people have opinions about pregnancy, birth, women's bodies. But right now, there's a real potential that federal law will change in America, and that there will be places where a woman choosing to end a pregnancy, for whatever reason, is a criminal act. Why do we care about this as Jews?
As we said when we were preparing, and I think this is an important point, we care about a lot of things on behalf of other people, because that's part of what it means to be a good, caring person with empathy and sympathy and all like that. So let's acknowledge that you could care about something, and I'm speaking to you, men, and women over childbearing age and women under childbearing age and women who expect to never have a child or who have finished having children, you could care about something that is not in your immediate plan, right? I think that most people do not have abortion in their immediate plan. You could care about it because it's a good thing to care about the needs of other people. But I want to say further, the phenomenon of abortion is inherently an issue that crosses between, at least the way it works in America, this is not true of all countries, it's frankly not all that true of Israel, but in America, it's an issue that crosses the lines or blurs the lines between what the state mandates or legislates and religion. Because the moment you talk about abortion, the moment you talk about life and conception and all of this. You're talking about religious values and a cardinal principle of the United States. In fact, if there's one principle upon which it was founded, it is a separation of church and state, meaning the separation of religion and state. So the moment the state is getting involved in determining whether abortion is legal or to outlaw it based on, again, that Christian definition of
when life begins.
It's not even the Christian definition, right? It's a Christian definition of when life begins. Then you are blurring that line of state and religion in a way that fundamentally disenfranchises anybody who does not sign on for that particular religion and that particular religious approach. And that means Jews. It's not only Jews. It's a lot of Christians. It's a lot of other religions as well. But to say that we can overturn Roe, technically, I think what it means, it sends the decision about abortion, the legality of abortion, back to the state. And then each state can decide, is it going to outlaw or not? And then what that means is that there are people who, for whatever terrible circumstances, whatever undesirable circumstances, that one might need an abortion, one might have an Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, Hasidic psak to go get an abortion, right? Meaning, paint this in the most small-c conservative terms that you can imagine within, from a Torah perspective, and the state would not allow that. And there's even the possibility, at least according to Rabbi Jeremy Weider's theorizing, there's even a possibility that the rabbi who says this psak would be prosecutable as encouraging, you know, abortion that would be outlawed. So now we've got an issue that disenfranchises my religious practice. My religious practice, if I'm in America needing an abortion as an Orthodox person, asking a religious shaila that tells me that under these circumstances, whatever those circumstances might be, you need an abortion and now you can't get it in whatever those states are. And there's more than half of the states are planning to, you know, uphold abortion bans, not protect the rights of abortion.
Let's be honest. Shoshana and Anne's pontification in our podcast is not going to change American law. It is not going to change Jewish law in any way. Who are we talking? We're talking to our audience. And I guess what I would want to say is, for those people who have strong opinions about ending a pregnancy, abortion, I always feel this in general. If you don't know about a topic, you shouldn't talk about it. Okay? I think you should learn as much as you can about anything. Why anyone would want to go into and learn so much about abortion? Well, maybe you won't, but if you're going to be talking about it and you're going to start saying, and I see this a lot, Judaism bans abortion. Judaism is pro-life. Judaism is, which by the way, other than very, very few things, you can't really say Judaism says, right? Like, it's super hard to do that.
Rabbi this, rabbi that, they disagree by definition, meaning plenty of rabbis have opined on termination of pregnancy in disagreement.
Right. Right. But I think anyone who really understands how Orthodox halacha works understands that every situation has its own answer. And so what people really, you know, it's funny how people believe in like 18 different hechsherim, but nobody, or not nobody, but so many people are like, this is what Judaism says about abortion. Part of this is human nature. A part of this is political. I do think, unfortunately, people have, you know, they take their political line. And so actually in one of the conversations, someone accused me of being woke and progressive left, and maybe I should start getting my ideas from the Torah instead of from woke terminology, which aside from being, oh, so very condescending, it's also not true. Okay, my opinions on whether abortion should be legal happen to be based on what I know about Judaism, how Judaism sees life, as you said, Anne, about when do we understand when life begins. As a person and a woman who understands what pregnancy, birth, raising children is all about. And the idea that, I guess I'm saying, I want people, when you talk about this topic, to please, please understand that you, unless you have been there, really have no idea what you're talking about when it comes to a woman who needs to have an abortion. Whether she's a 45-year-old woman who's Orthodox, whether she's a 16-year-old scared girl, whatever her circumstances are, it's not your damn business. And I feel like I just have to say that. Like, it has to be said in this podcast, and I'm happy to be that person.
I think this is exactly what we're here to discuss, right? What does it mean for policy to change in America? Because even though we're not in the United States, and even though this is not immediately our need, our concern, right? It's not personal in that way. There is still this question of what is happening in policy that affects people at large. So, for example, you want to say that you're coming at this from a Torah perspective when the people who are agitating that allowing for abortion to be legal is anti-Torah, which I fundamentally disagree with, right? Again, it does not mean that any individual needs to go choose to have an abortion. Every individual should consult with their rabbis, their doctors, their spouses, their personal ethics, and God, whatever, right? Meaning each person has a decision to make if they are ever in the situation of needing or debating an abortion. But as a matter of policy, we need an America that allows for those halachic events, meaning when a halacha dictates or suggests that a termination makes sense, to be allowed, to be available. And I want to say something else, Shoshana. You know, if they're going to accuse you of being woke and, you know, subsumed under liberal values that are not coming from a Torah's perspective, I would like to suggest that what happens, and I think it is also political, as you said, when people identify with a good number of the principles and ethos of a particular party, whether it's Democrat or Republican, the way it is in America divided in that way, right and left, then it becomes that much more, I don't know what, attractive, normal, I guess normal is what really happens, to sign on to other principles from within that same party. So, for example, if Orthodoxy, if a certain branch of traditional Orthodoxy most naturally affiliates with the right wing of the United States, meaning the Republican principles, and because they care about family values and things like that, so then automatically, again, automatically, it's something that seems to become normal that, okay, we're going to sign on to the Republican Party's approach to abortion. Now, I don't know when the Republican Party became so staunchly, like, vibrant, fiery against abortion. A lot has changed within the Republican Party within the past 10 years, let's say. But to say that the far right's definition of life, the far right's definition of how outlawed abortion should be, when frum people say that, I know I've said this poorly, but when frum people, when Orthodox people who care about halacha take that on, then they are borrowing, you'll forgive me, from the far right. And
100%.
And I want to say, I don't want the woke far left default being normal, and I don't want the far right default being normal. We need to come at this from a Torah perspective.
Ironically, Anne, you agree with the OU. I'm
in good company. I like the OU. Right.
So I'm not going to read the whole statement, but the OU did actually put out a statement. The first paragraph says, "The Orthodox Union is unable to either mourn or celebrate the news reports of the U.S. Supreme Court's likely overturning of Roe v. Wade. We cannot support absolute bans on abortion at any time point in the pregnancy that would not allow access to abortion in life-saving situations. Similarly, we cannot support legislation that permits abortion on demand at any time point during the pregnancy and does not confine abortion to situations in which medical, including mental health professionals, affirm that carrying the pregnancy to term poses a real risk to the life of the mother." And it continues a little bit, but basically that is their stance, which is that what you just said, right? We can't be far left and say everybody gets an abortion whenever. And we can't be far right and saying there's never abortion ever, which is, I don't know why that middle ground has become so foreign to us as human beings. We've covered quite well the idea that we can't take an extreme position and really call ourselves in line with Torah. I just want to tell people who are having conversations to remember who you're talking to. Well, I just want to call out men specifically to say, please, when you're having these conversations, acknowledge you will never, ever, ever be in this situation. And you are talking to women who either can or have been in this situation. And you're not going to solve Roe versus Wade and your Facebook, but you may actually affect the feelings and the mental state of another human being whom you're screaming at online. And I've seen this, and I see women, by the way, I can't even tell you the messages I've received. What is happening here? Why are men so involved in women's bodies? Like, I think it's actually doing the opposite, because it's making women realize, whoa, this is nuts. Like, well, I didn't even realize these people that I know for so long have these feelings, and maybe I need to think about this.
The other thing, Shoshana, that I think might be contributing to the vehemence of the discussion or the, I don't know, knee-jerk besides the conservative position, right? The people who have been aligned with the right for however long and don't like Democrat politics or whatever, I think there's a funny thing that's been happening, which is that the daf yomi, which has become a widespread learning practice these days, is Yevamot. And Yevamot is very counter in many ways to modern sensibilities, specifically with regard to things like marriage and divorce. And the past few days, meaning
bodily autonomy,
exactly. And it's about who can a Kohen Gadol marry, meaning like it's not necessarily practical. But one of the questions that came up in a very recent daf was literally this question of whose mitzvah is it to have children, right? To be fruitful and multiply, is that only on the man? Is it on the man and the woman? It's a machloket, it's a dispute in the Mishnah. I don't want to blur the lines here, but I think what might be happening is that all of this discussion for anybody who happens to be exposed to the daf is going on in the background. And I wonder to what extent that is having like a very subtle influence on people's like, well, isn't it also the father's obligation to have a child? So therefore it should be his decision about the baby. I feel like every woman has a knee-jerk reaction that like, even if the father should be involved in the discussion about what should happen, at the end of the day, you're talking about the woman's body and you're talking about the woman's health, physical health, mental health. I think that
what you're saying, Anne, isn't what people conclude. Like, you're just saying that like A plus B equals C. And that is not what people conclude. And that is why I'm so angry, right? My blood pressure's skyrocketing. I'm like, so every time this topic comes up, I'm like, grr! Because what you're saying, someone actually posed that on Facebook and tagged me for
the love
of God.
But I'm telling you, it's because of Daf Yomi. Nobody really asked this question until now.
Kal vachomer, Anne. So he's reading Daf and he's like, whoa, let me theoretically pontificate about who the baby belongs to. And if it's fruitful and multiply, maybe I have the right to force her to have a baby. And oh my God.
So let's answer it seriously. Whoever has the mitzvah of Pru Revu, that mitzvah happens, gets credited to your account, your divine account, after the baby is born. Prior to then, there's a period of Mayim Ba'alma, 40 days where the baby is not considered anything, not a baby. I do this all the time, right? Because naturally, my language is to speak about a baby in uterus, a fetus in uterus as a baby. But lahalacha, that's not accurate. Lahalacha, an ubar, a fetus, is not a tinok, a baby. And the Gemara does not make this mistake, even if I do in casual or even podcast conversation.
So when I was tagged in this thing, I tried to clarify, like, are you talking about a father who's married to the mother? They're planning a family together. They have stood under the chuppah and promised things to each other. Or are you talking about a one-night stand? Or he's like, I don't want to get into specifics. I'm like, how on earth are you asking a question? Like, if a woman is obligated to continue a pregnancy because of the sperm donor versus father versus one-night stand versus whatever, you know, a mitzvah to have a baby, if you don't clarify that relationship. And that, I think, even made it worse, which was just like, he's like, it doesn't matter. I'm like, oh my goodness. I had to extricate myself, but I want to read out loud what I posted on my own status because I had to get it out of my head. I wrote, I can't believe this has to be said, but your desire to do a mitzvah cannot be forced on another human being. That includes, no matter how badly you want to guard your eyes or your libido, you can't force women to hide or sit in the back of the bus or create a policy where all images are erased. You can hide if you choose. So too, if a woman is not a willing participant in your mitzvah of being fruitful and multiplying, you cannot force her to have a baby. Your right to her body does not begin when your sperm is inside of it, or at any other time. And while the rules may vary depending on the relationship between the man and the woman, the bottom line is that the Torah does not obligate a woman to endanger herself for your mitzvah. I don't know if anything needs to be said more than that on this particular line of questioning.
So I want to say this. I guess I feel that there's something more to say, which is as follows.
I guess so.
If you are a halachically observant person, and you care about halacha and the system that we have, namely, to do basically anything, you consult with halachic authorities, you consult with medical authorities, you consult with the relevant parties, which might in fact be your husband, for example. And at the end of the day, unless you are in a camp that is, let's say, Hasidic enough that somebody tells you what to do, and that is your decision, right? Meaning then you've decided that you're in that camp to make that kind of edict your decision, then what you really do is you take all that information, the halachic information, the medical information, everything else, and the woman, at the end of the day, is the person to make the decision. at least in a theoretical ideal world. And I know we don't want to talk about theory because we're talking about practice, because we're talking about real. But in the United States, this is about to get much more complicated for those for whom, after all the harangue and heartrending decision that they come to decide to terminate a pregnancy, in more than half the states, they will not be allowed to. And again, like, this is my pedestal, right? Like, I'm not in the United States and I'm not in the position of seeking an abortion. And I wouldn't have sought an abortion under many circumstances that people do. But I want the policy to allow for the halachically suggested, recommended, mandated option. And I don't see how the current position is going to allow that. Will our podcast change this? No, it will not. Will the more people talk and yap and get upset about this, will it allow pathways for people in need to find new ways to, God forbid, need to circumvent the law? I'm not encouraging anybody to break the law, but this law messes with our rights to freedom of religion. And I don't see how that's tenable.
I would certainly agree with you, Anne. And I do, just to close, and I'm bringing down my blood pressure, I would say people who want to pontificate, even if you have a very, very, very strong opinion based on the most machmir approach and you can prove it in all your sources, doesn't mean that you should think or believe or want Roe versus Wade to be overturned and for states to completely ban or criminalize abortion. You can have one personal opinion about something and another political opinion about something, certainly if you want to have the opportunity and the option to practice as an Orthodox Jew.
Thank you for joining us. I'm sure you have an opinion because it's abortion. Everyone's got an opinion. Come tell us what you think. Tell us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, personal communication. I'm sure I'm leaving something out, but you know how to find us.
C-H-O-C-H-M-A-T-N-A-S-H-I-M.
Can you hear us now?